Live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications Headquarters, you're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Greetings and welcome to another episode of the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. Gentlemen, I'm excited today because I have a new friend of mine on. His name is Jeff Shapiro, and he's from Missoula, Montana, which is very logical once you hear what he does. I found out about Jeff as he's a product ambassador for multiple adventure gear companies that my family is actually a consumer of, namely Keen, who makes shoes for adventuring, and also Cavu, which is a company that makes adventure gear and particularly clothing that I happen to like a lot. He just kept showing up under the list of adventurers associated with adventure-oriented companies. Now, I distinctly remember reading his story and seeing his photos and thinking, yeah, well, I only thought I was into amazing, cool stuff. Basically, here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to throw this on the table for you guys right now. Of the 20,000 or more of you guys who are going to listen to this show, including me, Jeff is more of a badass than any of us. In fact, if after listening to this episode you disagree, please email me because I'll want to have you on the show too. So let's just run through the list here of what Jeff does. Jeff is a wingsuit base jumper. If you've ever seen the guys who kind of wear the Rocky the Flying Squirrel suits and jump off cliffs and fly and thought that might have been cool, he's one of those. He's a 20-year veteran of hang gliding who has represented Team USA in the World Championships. He's an avid and expert paraglider. He's a world-class rock climber. He's an ultra-distance runner, which in and of itself is amazing to me. And get this, he's also a falconer, which is so cool, and I want to talk to him about that. And here's the thing, though. I don't know what you're picturing this guy is going to be like, but he's about as cool and down-to-earth as you can get. A great example of a guy who's got everything in the world to brag about, yet he doesn't. Hence the main focus of today's show, which I'm going to call getting over yourself. So I asked Jeff a question. I said, hey, Jeff, would you rather stay in your comfort zone, which is an ironic comfort zone, of course, considering he jumps off cliffs, on this show talking about adventure stuff, or would you accept the challenge to tackle a topic he may not have been interviewed about before? Well, guess what? His answer was, yeah, man, let's go for it. Let's talk about the topic du jour. So without any further ado, Jeff, man, welcome.
Oh, thanks so much, Scott. Yeah, I'm really appreciative of being on your show, and I've been looking forward to it. And it's interesting to listen to you talk about the things that I enjoy doing and what, you know, what I am connected to identity. I would just say a life lover for sure. And I hope that that's something that, you know, the people listening can appreciate and identify with.
Yeah, you know, when I first talked to you, which was yesterday or the day before, I suggested to you that maybe the topic of the show would be wringing every last ounce out of life, because I sense that about you already. And definitely, so many people live their life, they just get up this morning and do what they did yesterday. And what I always like to say, and I've said several times on the show, is too many people get themselves a big screen TV and watch everybody else live life for them.
Yeah, it's an interesting way of escaping, I guess. But I think each of us have a truest path. And I think that that truest path involves learning as much as possible in the lifespan that we have. So being able to experience new things, new culture, new people, new perspectives, to me, that's been the point of my life. And I certainly feel lucky and privileged to explore things that do make me uncomfortable, as you mentioned, you know.
Yeah, I'm guessing that, like me, you're a naturally curious person. Did I hit the nail on the head?
For sure. For sure. I think that that actually is one of the most common themes in people like yourself and myself, certainly, that we're curious. And you know, every day, if you can channel that level of curiosity into action, then you're going to experience a lot of cool stuff along the way. So yeah, I would say that's more accurate description than any other.
It's really a shame that more people aren't curious. I mean, people will let things fly by them in their daily world and not give a rat's ass about it. And that's always been something that not only just mystified me, but kind of troubled me. I mean, how come people with one life to live can't live more? You know, everybody kind of puts the memes up on their Facebook and does the rah-rah speech. But at the end of the day, we eat the same food. We do the same things. We talk to the same people and we live in the same town and we don't ever enjoy anything.
Well, I mean, I think, and I mean this not from a judgmental point of view, certainly, but from more of an observation point of view, I think that there's a lot of fear and doubt, and consequence is a real thing. You know, consequence for decisions that we make, good and bad. You know, when I describe the word consequence, I would say that that can mean something really good too. I think certainly that's a real thing involved in the decision to try something that is out of your comfort zone, that does feel maybe a bit unattainable or scary in one way or the other. And yet those, as we both know, those are the moments that define who we become, not who we are, but who we become, because a lot of times what is most scary is the unknown. And I think, you know, people ask me a lot, like, well, you know, how do you do this or make it work or whatever? And my answer is always, well, it's really easy. You just do it. And it doesn't sound easy because it doesn't feel easy, but it actually is. It just requires putting one foot in front of the other. And unfortunately, sometimes that can be scary, but the scariest steps will lead to the largest amounts of personal growth. And that seems to be, for me, that seems to be sort of the point of it. You know, I don't want to ever lose the plot. And sometimes fear and doubt can cause me to do that, to let opportunities slip by. And that, to me, is kind of missing the plot, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. And to me, it's almost kind of reassuring. And I'm sure to a lot of people out there that you still feel these emotions about trying something new and doing something that's exciting to you. Because everybody else who's listening is probably thinking, well, man, you know, I'm scared to get my passport and go to Mexico, let alone what this guy's doing. And I think, you know, it's valid to take a step back and say, all right, you know, anytime I'm trying something new or something different, I'm allowed to have those emotions. And yet the greatest feeling in the world is standing up to that and moving forward instead of saying, ah, you know what, it's a lot safer if I just sit here and not do it. So I really appreciate that you said that.
Yeah, absolutely. What you just said hit the nail on the head is that when you discover that you're capable of doing more than you think, or able to step past those fears and experience something anyways, the outcome isn't really the point. The outcome that is the point is the one that tells you that you're actually capable of doing more than you think. And all of a sudden, if you can do whatever it may be, travel, quit the job that you hate, whatever, you say, oh, well, if I can do that, then I can actually do a lot more than I thought. And that promotes even further growth, which, you know, has certainly been true in my life. But, you know, when you mentioned fear, like I'm a normal dude. I feel fear just like everybody else. The interesting lesson that I've learned over the years is that fear is an emotion just like happiness, just like many other emotions that we feel. And what is an interesting skill set is to learn how to recognize that, to file it, and then to give that file the weight that it's worth. And in some cases, when you're actually in danger, it's important to listen to that that feeling or that emotion. If you're not actually in danger, then the fear and doubt can just be filed away and put in the corner, and then you can say, well, I'm going to experience this anyways, because the outcome is going to be growth and perspective, and that's important enough.
A lot of times when people take part in really extreme activities, they're classified by onlookers as fearless. But, you know, I kind of know better. And I'm guessing that you don't consider yourself fearless as much as a guy who looks at fear and manages it when you're doing these things, which I think is more courageous than fearless, right?
For sure. Fearless is not accurate. Anybody who tells you that they're not afraid, you know, and that fear is relative, right? It can be, not just about jumping off of cliffs. It can be fear of, failure, or certainly, fear of the risk in, relationships, or involved in, a number of aspects of life. So I think that all of us are human, and part of being human, part of the human experience, is feeling with our hearts and then thinking with our heads. And that balance between intuitive and linear thought enables us to make decisions. And, you know, weighing those things is something that I do just like everybody else. I feel the same level of fear. It's just a matter of how you manage it, and then how you can logically decide what is going to be the best and most truest decision to make, you know?
Yeah. You know, you mentioned getting into relationships. I think for a lot of these guys listening, getting into a relationship feels a lot like jumping off a cliff. So I can readily understand what you're talking about. I'm reminded of an old interview that the sportscaster Jim Rome did with Evel Knievel years ago. And Jim Rome was asking Evel about the time that he sat in a rocket and jumped the Snake River Canyon, or at least attempted to. And Jim Rome said, you know, you're trying to do this for the thrill of it. I mean, what did you expect that your chances would be to live from that? And Evil said, 50-50. And Jim Rome's like, that's amazing. You know, 50% chance you're going to die doing this. Yet you strap yourself in and did it anyway. I mean, why would you do that? And after a famously pregnant pause that was way too long for radio, Evel Knievel responded deadpan. He said, you know who the hell I am. And it was one of the most infamous moments in all of sports radio history, basically. And I'm reminded of that interview talking to you because, let's face it, Jeff, you do some things that are just crazy. I mean, at least to the normal everyday person watching. I mean, we would all love to know what it feels like to get in a wingsuit and fly, not just like an eagle, but like a peregrine falcon at, you know, 200 miles an hour. It's something we can't even comprehend. And the risks associated with it, let's just be frank about it, are huge. I mean, the first thing that came up for me when I Googled your sport is how many people died doing it last year. Do you think you're kind of an Evel Knievel type of guy? Do you characterize yourself as a daredevil? Or did you kind of start off slow and kind of work your way up to this level of thrill?
You know, I don't, I certainly would never categorize myself as a stuntman or anybody who needs that level of thrill to operate normally. But And the other part of this, that question that I think is important to realize is that when people see a video or, you know, whatever film of someone jumping off a cliff, it does look crazy because what they don't see is the countless hours of training prehand to earn the right to be on that cliff to jump off. And I don't ever jump off hoping for the best. I never go for a flight or... Sometimes there are adventures that have uncertainty. In fact, you know, on a level of percentage, nothing is 100%. The guarantee is like perfect. That term doesn't make any sense to me. So there is a level of risk management that's involved, but you do train and you do earn the right to be there. And if I was hoping for the best, I wouldn't do those things because, you know, a common phrase that we use in the jumping world is, jumping is worth it, but one jump is not worth it. You know, every jump is the most important jump of your life. And if you were hoping for the best, that wouldn't be a good enough reason to do something like that. But I would be lying if I said that I like the fact that if you make a mistake, well, let's put it this way. I like that the consequences are high, and I like that it requires a level of focus to accomplish what it is that you're trying to accomplish, because I know from experience that the result of that is pretty profound and relative to the rest of my life and relative to the way that I operate as a father and as a husband and as a friend, a son and a brother. And I think that, you know, is one jump worth it? No, but the way it shapes my life is worth it. So am I a daredevil or a thrill seeker? No, not at all. Am I curious and fascinated about the parts of life that are hard to attain and adventurous? Absolutely. I've always been that way. And, you know, ironically, what as a young man drove me to do some of these things, ego and ambition, over the process of learning how to do those things and then the experiences along the way, including the bad ones, you know, seeing friends die or that sort of thing, the humbling experiences. They have also led me to understand that those original driving reasons, ego and ambition, are really trivial and don't matter. And it changes a person from being goal-driven to process-driven. And that's probably been one of the number one positive changes from doing the things that I enjoy doing.
I have to hand it to you, man. That was a brilliant segue to the meat and potatoes of this particular show. You know, you're starting to talk about how, as a young man, you did have some ego. And, you know, of course, what we're talking about here is that all important idea of getting over oneself. Obviously, what you're talking about here in terms of preparation for doing wingsuit jumping is countless skydives, I'm sure, probably in the hundreds to even qualify. Lots of base jumping experience before you even get to even breathe on a wingsuit, I'm sure. So not only does the nature of the sport itself winnow down the number of guys who are going to be trying it, but I'm sure a lot of guys just throw in the towel going, oh, you mean it's that much preparation? I have to do that much to even, you know, sniff the opportunity to do this. Like everything else in life, people probably just quit before they start. I mean, I think every guy has wanted to be a guitar player, but as soon as their fingers hurt, they quit. You know, they're done. I said, maybe I'll try something else. But one of the things I also heard you saying that I really want to dig into here is all of that preparation and the humbling experiences that come along with, as you said, when we were chit-chatting before the microphone was on, you know, you got your ass kicked a little bit. And what that does is it makes you a different person. So what do you think it is about the training and the preparation that has caused your demeanor to change over time? Because I think that's kind of the secret sauce of what we're talking about, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that operating on any level that involves risk management includes the requirement for confidence, and confidence is earned. It's something that you get through trial and error and hopefully small enough steps that you can learn inexpensive lessons. But the challenge of ego is it ends up being the point. And that wasn't a point that I was aware of before I started. You know, the point was adventure. The point was how amazing it would be to experience this. The point was my fascination with flying and human flight in particular, my love for the mountains, my love for exploration. All of those might have been more inherent in the way I was raised or just at a level that, you know, maybe I was just born that way. But the result is, when I say ego, I don't necessarily just mean the ego that thinks you got it, you know, like, oh, I got it. That's one part of the ego. The other part is the ego that tries to keep us alive. And the ego that allows us to see our world through the filters of our own eyes, meaning, you know, our world, we're sort of all the hero of our story or the center of our own universe. But what is a really, really, really interesting and helpful experience that for me has come from doing some of these things that have involved risk, certainly, is to see the world as it is and not how you want it to be. In other words, to fit inside of it. And that for me has only been achievable by feeling vulnerable, by putting myself in a position where I do feel small and sense the scale. That's true. You know, it's really easy to feel large in the scale of your perspective if you're looking at the world only through your own eyes. But if you can step outside of yourself and discover how small we actually are, that's a really useful thing for, so let's just say, communicating with another human being, or to, you know, you mentioned relationships, to have an effective relationship with a partner. It's really a helpful thing to be able to step outside of yourself and see how that perspective might be viewed by someone other than yourself. But yeah, training is a part of that process and is required to keep breathing. And when things go wrong, I do get my ass kicked, and that adds perspective and humility as well. And that humility sort of enables me to be thankful for what I have in a way that I wasn't able to before that experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Jeff, you know, listening to you talk, I'm reminded there are two kinds of people out there who are uber impressive people, if you will. They're the people who have their heads in the clouds over it. You know, whether you want to call that ego or self-importance, douchebaggery, whatever you want to call it. And then there's people who just don't. You know, I'm personally a huge San Antonio Spurs fan, and not just because that's where I live, but because of their longtime coach, Greg Popovich. And he famously says quite often that he only wants players who are, quote unquote, over themselves. And in my opinion, he sets a fine example. And of course, the Spurs are the most successful NBA team over the last couple of decades. And man, the players, the Tim Duncans, Manu Ginobili's, Kawhi Leonard's of the world, are just, David Robinson's of the world, are just beloved here in San Antonio. I mean, we all hope Manu never retires, because at 40 years old, he's having another great year. But he's just such a great guy. We don't want him to quit. But at the same time, we can't get him in the Hall of Fame soon enough. And that guy's going to get in the Hall of Fame, even though he's basically been a sixth man his entire career. He won the Olympics for Argentina. He's the only guy ever to win an Olympic gold medal, an NBA championship, and a EuroLeague championship. And that's all well and good. But the reason why everybody projects that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer has a lot to do with just how super great a guy he is and how down to earth he is. The stories of how well he's treated fans and how cool a guy he is. and how accessible he is and how over himself he is are just legendary around here. Meanwhile, you look at guys like, I don't know, Pete Rose, Barry Bonds. If you ask anybody, I think I've said this on the show before, who's the home run king? Most people are going to forget it's Barry Bonds because they want to forget Barry Bonds. I mean, here was a guy who basically scoffed at signing autographs, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, Pete Rose, if he would just get over himself and apologize for what he did and treat people with a little more respect instead of being so caustic and egotistical about himself and what he did and et cetera, et cetera, I'm sure those guys would get into the Hall of Fame. Yet, to me, it's just absolutely amazing how, you know, Hollywood actors and actresses end up not being asked to be in movies anymore or TV shows because they're famously difficult to work with. I mean, there's Katherine Heigl stories out there about that's why she's not in movies anymore. And yet, one thing I've noticed is that when people do get over themselves, more doors open. So I'm left wondering why in the world anyone would allow themselves to get to be such a douchebag, to think they're better than everyone else. And I think the word I'm looking for is just arrogance. People just start thinking they're better than everybody else because their accomplishments are so high. Before I give you the mic back, I'm going to go ahead and drop a little bomb on this conversation. One thing I've noticed is that the more impressive someone really is, the more someone has accomplished, and the genuine accomplishments I'm talking about here, things that they really can be proud of, I've noticed that they're more likely to be down to earth and over themselves. I mean, I've met really wealthy guys and really famous guys who were just some of the coolest guys I've ever met. It's almost as if there's no need to discuss it. They've gotten their accolades. They've gotten the approval that we all seek. And that just in turn makes the person all that much more impressive, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly feel that way about other people that I've met. And I think that a couple of things that were said to me a long time ago that certainly make a lot of sense. One is that you can always discover someone's character by the way they treat people who can't do anything for them. And then the other is something that has just been a realization, certainly one that's proven true over the last 10 or 15 years, is that, and everybody should feel this way or should know this about themselves. Every one of us is included in this. Everybody has something to learn from me and everybody has something to teach me. And what's really important about that is that, you know, respect means that when I meet somebody, I understand that I haven't walked in their shoes and I have no idea the amount of experience and knowledge that they bring to the table. And whether it's impressive to me or not, you know, in other words, when someone says, oh, so-and-so has done this or has done that, or they haven't done this or haven't done that, relative to the amount of respect they're given, maybe applicable to a particular sport as an example, I would argue or challenge that, yeah, but, you know, maybe that person doesn't climb 514, but they have raised children. And, you know, that has a huge impact on who they are and how much, you know, maybe life perspective they have that can be gleaned from. So I don't know. I think those things are really important. And it's funny because you really do have to check yourself. Sometimes I'm in a room with a bunch of people. And the one thing I love about where I live is that I could be in a room with a bunch of professional athletes and you would never know it because every single one of them is in the corner talking quietly about their kids, you know. That to me feels really good because those are, you know, those are the really impressive people. And certainly character and integrity are the number one things, in my life that demand being paid attention to, you know, relative to my own life for sure.
I love how you added there that character and integrity are important to keeping a level head because I believe that myself, you know. Character is having a belief system that you operate by even when nobody else is looking. And theoretically, that shouldn't be affected by abilities or accolades or fame or badassery or anything of the sort. You should continue to be the person you have decided you should be based on your principles and based on your character. So I love what you said. And I also want to acknowledge, yeah, that you live in Montana, which is a place where famous badasses go to get away from all that attention and kind of just take a breath and live their own life. So that makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting to me is that so some of the most meaningful adventures in my life have been, say, crossing a mountain range at Cloud Base in a paraglider, or going out for a wingsuit base jump by myself in the mountains here. And the reason why those are important is because important to me is because when I'm done with those activities, there was no one who was there to see it and no one who gives a shit. And the coolest part about that is that I can't share those adventures in the way they changed me. I can't share those through a story with somebody. I can't tell someone what it was like to be at Cloud Base with an eagle over this mountain range and have it mean anything to them. But what I can do is the way that that experience changed me as a person, I can share that by trying to be a good person and to be a good father or whatever, you know. And that, I think, is has been the greatest benefit of those things. And I see that in other, it doesn't even have to be athletes, you know, it can be people who are exceptionally good in their business or exceptionally passionate about their art or about their music or whatever it may be, the path that that person's on. The people who gain from those, the lessons and the change in their nature or their perspective, they share those by having strong character and by being people that we all tend to sort of, you know, listen to or gravitate towards because of that. And certainly I could name a lot of my friends that I would put on that list, and I'm very grateful to know and have taught me a lot about life and who I want to be and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, having long-term positive influence over others is really something that contributes to leaving this world better than you found it. And it's so much deeper than just any passing fluffy accolade that someone could give you in a moment because you were begging for it. And what I love about what you're saying is it implies maturity. I mean, little boys are the ones who go around sticking out their chest going, hey, look what a badass I am. And as you alluded to earlier, Jeff, you know, you get beat up a little bit, you wreck sometimes, you crash, you get second or third or last place a few times. And, you know, you're reminded that you're human like everybody else. And maybe it's someone else's turn for the spotlight and you don't necessarily have to beat your chest. And then you realize that you're in it for the love of the game, which is the first thought I had when you were talking about going out by yourself and doing a jump when no one else is watching. And that kind of grounds you too, doesn't it? That you're doing what you're meant to do and you're able to influence other people positively by doing it. I mean, that kind of cures you of any need to get approval from anyone anymore, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Like I can think of a particular athlete that I have a lot of respect for, and he was asked in a recent interview, because he's basically won everything there is to win in that particular sport. You know, he was asked whether or not he would continue to compete, you know, being that he's basically, you know, stood on every podium there is. And his answer was, well, of course I will. And as long as I'm having fun doing it, then I'm going to continue to compete, because the reason why I compete is not to stand on the podium. It's because it fulfills me and because it's fun. And I, like you said, the love of the game, you know. And then when I look at it from sort of a stoic point of view, you really need to discover the balance of life. And the balance, for me at least, the balance is the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. So I wouldn't have the perspective of winning if I didn't know what it was like to lose. And if you look at it from that angle, then losing is really positive because it teaches you a lot about yourself and it all leads to personal growth. And then, you know, I get to these points where I start thinking, well, what's the point of it all? You know, what is the purpose of life? And that's a pretty big question, but we've all asked ourselves that. I mean, I don't think you would be human if you didn't ask yourself what the purpose of it was. And I keep coming back to that same thing that you pointed out. And it's our purpose is to wake up in the morning inspired, to feel motivated, to do what calls to us and what fulfills us as people. And then to hopefully leave the world a better place by, you know, having some positive influence on the people that you come into contact with and that you have the privilege of sharing time with. And, you know, I feel like if I can do that, then I can live without regret. And, you know, to me, that's sort of the purpose.
Now, you're a family man also, and you just finished talking about how having a grounded attitude really helps in your relationships. You've been married for 22 years to the same woman. Almost like, I don't know who cracked that joke. It was one of those Stephen Wright jokes about how, you know, the one where he goes to a convenience store at midnight and the guy's locking the door and he says, wait a minute, the sign says you're open 24 hours. And the guy goes, not in a row, you know? So it's kind of an old Henny Youngman joke, but yeah, you've been married for 22 years to the same woman and you have a daughter. And I want to ask you, how has your lifestyle choice influence the nature of your marriage? In other words, is your wife an adventurer like you? Does she sit home wringing her hands, hoping you live every time you do something dangerous. How does that work? And also, are you passing on that sense of wonder and adventure to your daughter? Are you okay with her following in your footsteps, literally? Or are they off doing something else? Is their adventure different? How does that dynamic work in your family?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated question, being that over 22 years, things have changed significantly. My wife and I have known each other since we were teenagers. So she, I think, was pretty aware of what she was getting herself into, although things have changed. And we certainly have changed as individuals, which has changed our relationship over the years. Just like everybody, we've had ups and downs, and in the end up in a place that there's a greater level of understanding and a more efficient communication. She is a rock climber and enjoys being extremely active, but is more risk adverse, doesn't like to do things that involve, you know, making life and death decisions in the same way that I do. My daughter takes after her more than me, which is great, which I'm really, really grateful for. But I also think as parents, we lead by example. You know, what we do for our kids is certainly secondary or even lower than that on the list than what we teach them to do for themselves. And I think that lip service is not nearly as effective as like living by example. So yes, I think that she is influenced by what I do, but in a way that she understands that it's okay to chase her happiness. You know, it's okay to fail. It's okay to be passionate about things that other people think are absurd, and it's okay to be wrong, and it's okay to be happy. You know, I think that those lessons hopefully are lessons that will apply to her path. And does that have to be the same as mine? No, I hope not. Jumping off a cliff is something I don't necessarily want for her, but she is interested in paragliding. She is rock climbing a lot and is really good at it and is really passionate about it. And you know, we only have two rules in our family when it comes to climbing together, and that's try hard and have fun. And so for me, you know, that is a huge benefit because we get to do it together as family, but it's not because I care whether she does something that I do as much as just, I just want her to chase her passions and to understand that the experiences we have are more important than things that we, especially as a Western society, tend to put high value on, like how much money we make or what our job title is. So yeah, I mean, I'm doing the best I can. And Kara and I, over the 22 years of being married and working on our relationship, are trying to raise a daughter that is respected. She has a voice in our house and that respects herself in a way that allows her to be self-confident and to look at the world as an opportunity and as something that allows for her curiosity to drive her path.
You know, as a man, I find it wonderful to have strong, powerful, confident women in the house.
Absolutely. My partner, Kara, is that way. She also lives in a way that creates an example for my daughter that I'm extremely proud of. She's exceptionally kind. She's very empathetic, but she's also secure in her own views. And man, I think that you're right. I think strong women, strong partnerships, certainly for me, a wife and a daughter that believe in their own voice, their own worldview. That is a huge example that for me is healthy to you know, to try and emulate or to learn from.
What advice would you give young guys, or maybe even some mature guys listening, who may be looking at themselves in the mirror right now, going, "Yeah, you know what? You know, having listened to these guys talk on this podcast today, maybe I could use a bit of getting over myself." It's not necessarily that you have to take a hit to your confidence. Certainly confidence is a good thing. So how would you tell these guys to balance their desire for some recognition, their desire to succeed, and indeed their confidence building? How do they want to reconcile all that with their outward persona, maybe their inner game in terms of how they view themselves, to become someone who is really a badass, yet someone who is indeed over themselves? What are the steps? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think that just like any issue, let's make a really simple example of it. Let's say alcoholism. You know, the first step to becoming healthier about your relationship with alcohol is to recognize that you have an issue. You know, so for me, a lot of times self-reflection is the answer. You know, you're saying looking in the mirror. Well, that's the first step. That's it. Is who do you want to be? You know, do you want to be someone that has empathy, that is known as someone who cares about other people? And, you know, you have to recognize, or at least I have, that those feelings of wanting to accomplish and those feelings of having a high level of self-expectation, it's totally normal. It's totally okay to feel that way. It's the level of importance that you put on it and your behavior that becomes who you are. In other words, what you think is it might drive direction, but what you do is who you are. And so that's what I would say is for me, I've just really tried to focus on thinking before I speak, who do I want to be? And I'm not always going to achieve that. But as long as I'm working towards it, I'm doing the best that I can. And I think recognition of who you want to be is sort of the most difficult question to answer. But when you do have a grasp on who that is, then you just put one foot in front of the other and do the best that you can every day to emulate that person that you want to be.
And I echo everything you said 100%. I would add a more pragmatic layer on top of that. Getting over yourself now, even before perhaps you've accomplished what you want to accomplish, will enable, and I will even say allow people to feel better about helping you succeed. You know, unless you plan on doing this all by yourself, and listen, you've already heard Jeff talk like this, guys. Nobody is self-made. Jeff's had people train him. Jeff's had to learn the ropes from someone else. I'm sure Jeff's had mentors, as I have. You're not going to be self-made. Someone is going to be there as another human being to assist you in this process to achieving greatness. So if you're a person who's full of yourself and trying to get all the attention or trying to get all the approval, human nature is people will give you less of it. But the more gracious you are, and that's another great word to use here is gracious, the more, like Jeff said, you treat people who don't have anything you can benefit from still like human beings who are worthy of your respect. All those things measure up to a guy people want to watch succeed. And when people are rooting for you, you get more opportunities, you get more of the success you're looking for. And when you accept that success with some grace and some humility and really forsake that arrogance and that desire, that perhaps greed for more attention, what ends up happening is you meet your goals sooner because people are helping you, like I said. And also, once you start enjoying those successes, you've already built that habit of relaxing into them and letting other people give you the accolades instead of begging for them. And that, of course, has a snowball effect of getting you even more success. This is why I don't think it's an accident that guys who are uber successful, like I said, very often are gracious, down-to-earth, cool people who want to ask you what you're about and what you're doing, and more than talking about themselves again for the upteenth time.
And one more thing to add, you know, what's interesting is what you talked about before about, or what we talked about before about purpose. And if the purpose of life is to experience it in the best way that you can and add some level of positivity to the lives of the people that you're in contact with or you come into contact with, you know, when I see people or describe even something that I might be involved with, like climbing or whatever, when you think about accomplishments, what it's doing is it makes you feel good, and it makes you feel good because it's feeding the ego. But the rawest and most important part of the human experience is to achieve happiness, you know? And so at least in my perspective, so the truest thing would be to admit to yourself that, like, as an example, it's just rock climbing. Like, nobody gives a shit really about rock climbing. It's a fulfilling thing, and it adds a lot to my life because it teaches me what I'm capable of and what I'm not, and allows me to learn and grow and all these things. But the act of rock climbing or doing something hard or being strong or whatever, like, nobody gives a shit. What is most important is that, you know, if you can share it in a way that speaks to the heart of it, then it might speak to somebody in a way that points that out, that it doesn't matter if that person gets what they get from it in terms of inspiration because they're a rock climber. It doesn't matter at all. They could be doing anything. They could be doing whatever calls to them. The point of it isn't the rock climbing or the getting stronger. The point of it is to wake up in the morning and to be inspired and have that inspiration motivate you to walk your truest path, to live your truest life and to be the best person that you can be. And hopefully that means teaching and learning along the way. And to me, that's been the coolest privilege of, you know, of my life, I guess.
Yeah, I'm smiling while you're talking, and I have to laugh out loud because you're so right. if you're thinking, man, I'm going to do all these badass things and I'm going to be like the coolest guy in the room because of it, boy, are you in for a cold shower when you realize
no one cares. No one cares.
I mean,
and they shouldn't.
I mean, Emily and I have been to a bunch of countries. No one cares. No one wants to hear about it. My own siblings don't want to hear about it. They're not going to a bunch of countries. Therefore, they don't want to hear about it. They don't want to be bothered with it. They don't want to be reminded they're not going to a bunch of countries. But I have a little club that Emily and I go to where we've all been to a bunch of countries, and we love to talk about going to a bunch of countries with each other. And similarly, you know, our family's involved with BMX racing. And if you're an adult in BMX racing, people look at you and go, what, you're riding around on little kid bikes? What are you doing out there? No one cares. And I mean, people don't even know what it is. It's like, oh, is that like motorcycles and stuff? And you know, nobody cares. They think it's really neat that my little daughter's good at it. And they really think that my wife, who's 46, is really cool because, you know, she goes out there and races in the dirt and stuff. But at the end of the day, nobody really cares. And it's kind of like this show. If I would have had you on, Jeff, and we would have just talked about how badass you are at flying around like Rocky the Flying Squirrel, nobody would have cared. Nobody would have listened. I think what these guys want to know is what's in it for them. And I think, you know, when you live your life saying, what can I do to enrich the lives of others? In this case, you know, we're talking about, hey, here's a great skill in terms of getting over yourself. You know, from a perspective of humility, of course, we've been able to offer something of value to these guys. And I think that feels better than just beating our chests and talking about what we're good at. And I knew, having done a little bit of research on you, that was probably going to appeal to you more than doing the 50,000th interview on, you know, like you said earlier, before we were on the air here, what's it like to fly around and how long is it going to be till you die like the rest of your friends? You know, I mean, that's a boring interview.
Right, right. Well, and, you know, and like you said, you know, nobody might care about how many countries you visited, but the experiences that you had when you go to a third world country and someone rocks up and they're obviously happy and have nothing. That perspective that is gained by the fact that actually happiness isn't connected to things enables you to interact with people at home in a way that they would appreciate and is distinctly more human than trying to convince them that you're a badass because you do this or do that, you know? So I think that there's a lot of value in that. And that's what I meant about the way that these experiences affect your perspective and change you as a person is far more valuable than the experiences applicable to someone else in a story.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, 100%. And of course, everything you do, everything I do affects our world perspective. And this is why, you know, for our part, we think it's great to get our kids involved in sports where they may scuff up their knees sometimes and take them all over the world and meet children from other places.
For sure.
For the same reason you said. And, you know, to me, it all comes back down to love of the game. If you're in this for the trophies, the sport's going to get old pretty quickly.
That's right.
If you're in it because you love to ride or love to fly or love to go see the world or whatever it is you're doing, you're going to have a lot longer a shelf life at what you do.
That's it.
Love it.
That's it.
Now, on that note, before we close this show and I tell guys how to find out about you, I'm going to selfishly ask you about falconing anyway, because I really want to know how you get into that and what it's like and what the process is to get a bird, like a wild falcon, to do your bidding while out hunting for you. I mean, that's a cool thing to do. And you're the first guy I've ever met who does it.
Yeah, I am. I got into it. I was really fascinated with raptors. It's certainly linked to my fascination with flight. I used to draw them as a kid, you know, I went to art school. I've always been interested in art. And a lot of my art has centered around birds. It's just a description of my fascination with raptors. And one day I found a short-eared owl that somebody had shot, probably by accident, and took it to a raptor rehabber and learned about falconry. And that was probably 18 or 19 years ago now. And that's how I got involved. The art of falconry, it's, you know, over 10,000 years old. In fact, I think the relationship between man and falcon is the oldest relationship between humans and animals in history, certainly older than relationships with dogs or horses. And what's really cool about it, what I appreciate about it is that you're not training the bird to do tricks. Or, you know, you're bidding or whatever. What it is that you're taking a self-actualized predator and convincing it through positive reinforcement that you're an advantage in its life. And so it chooses to be your partner. Otherwise, it would just fly away. You know, birds, they're not social in a way that they understand discipline. They have two reactions to discipline. It's either fight or flight. They're either going to grab you or they're going to fly away. So to convince a wild bird that not only are you not going to eat it, but that you're actually an advantage in its life, allows for a partnership that's really unique. in nature. And going out and being a flyer myself, getting to witness my bird fly is really a thing of beauty. And I feel super privileged to do it. And then, yeah, I go out and partner with this bird, and we go out and we hunt in Montana. And for me, it's a bit of a source of meditation. It's alone, quiet time. Usually I'm by myself with the bird and sometimes a dog. And it's got the patience and the just being in nature, you know, often that's the point of things for me. And so that in itself has been applicable to the rest of life, more so than I would have thought, you know, learning patience and learning how to solve problems through positive reinforcement, which is a large factor in training falcons, has, you know, allowed me to, you know, maybe handle like my relationship with my daughter differently, you know, as an example.
Wow. Even your relationship with your daughter. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I dreamed up probably what is going to be the most insane interview question I have ever attempted to ask in 12 years of doing podcasts. But I'm going to go ahead and ask it anyway, just because I'm curious. When you have your falcon out there and the falcon's flying, do you take notes from the falcon? And does that in turn affect how well you fly when you have the wingsuit on?
You know, I have learned so much about flying and the way I fly from watching birds. It's not a silly question at all. And the answer is 100% yes.
I suspected so.
For sure. You know, in a paraglider, not so much in a wingsuit. A wingsuit is like, you know, you jump off a cliff and gravity feeds the flight. So you're really reacting to what's in front of you. All time goes away. It's very, 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 it's a very present form of flying. Whereas flying a hang glider or a paraglider, you're traveling through the sky and navigating through the sky in the exact same way that hawks and falcons do. You're finding thermals, you're using the wind, you're using the terrain and skybound clues like clouds to be able to navigate from where you launch to wherever you may land. And sometimes that's hundreds of miles away. When I watch birds fly, you can learn a lot by their drift and thermals, by the way they thermal, by what they stop for and what they don't. I've flown with a lot of birds all over the world, and oftentimes I'll be on a long cross country flight, which means, you know, that I'm trying to fly distance, you know, to either a goal at a competition or to an undetermined place. And along the way, I'll be saved by birds. But what that means is that I would have landed if I didn't see a bird climbing and flew over to it and gotten to that same thermal and climbed back to cloud base with that bird. And, it's cool. And it certainly applies to my fascination with falconry. So when I have a relationship, a personal relationship with a bird, and I watch him fly, not only am I still learning from it, but there's a little bit of a sense of pride too. You know, I raised the falcon that I'm currently hunting with. I raised from the time that he was an IS or what would equate to a chick, you know, just a little ball of down with feet that were way too big. And now, you know, we're totally bonded. He knows me as an individual. He knows my voice. And I let him go and he flies hundreds of feet above me and circles and follows me around a field until I provide an opportunity for him to chase, catch and kill something, which he trusts that I'll do through consistency. That level of relationship and bond between the two of us, having raised him since he was a chick, that also is inclusive in that level of pride and that benefit of watching him fly, that sort of that feeling that I get when I watch him fly.
I can just hear the passion for life in your voice when you talk about this stuff. Even though you're kind of down to earth and sort of soft spoken about it, I can still hear that positive energy. It's amazing. And guys, if there's ever been a guest who requires pictures and video, it would be one Jeff Shapiro. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you on over to his Cavu ambassador page so you can watch the killer video about Jeff that's on there and see some pictures. And it's absolutely worthwhile. Nothing to buy or sell there, but you know what? You're going to like the video. You're going to like what you're going to see. So go ahead and go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/Shapiro, Shapiro, and watch all the badass stuff that Jeff's up to. Jeff, man, this has been a great conversation. We got to talking about some really unique ideas here, and I think the guys are really going to benefit from it. Thanks a million, man.
Oh, thanks for having me, Scott. It was a real pleasure and privilege. Thanks.
Yeah, all privilege is shared. And guys, if you want to get in on my newsletter and learn how to be a better man and get better with women, and by the way, if you're over yourself, yes, that is going to get you more women, more high-quality women for better long-term relationships in your life than being a douchebag, I promise. regardless of what you may have heard elsewhere. I promise that's going to be a better deal for you. Anyway, if you want to get on my newsletter, go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com. Learn how to be a better man. Learn how to get better women in your life, including the woman of your dreams. Guys, until I talk to you again real soon, this is Scott McKay from San Antonio, Texas. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is copyright 2016 by X and Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the X and Y Communications newsletter. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.